what to say. But its manner of saying it, even its dialect.
Imperishable phantoms, love and fame, nor beauty burning on the mist and mire of fugitive uncapturable fire, nor God that is a darkness and a name. Not these my choric dreams acclaim, but death. The last and ultimate desire, great death I praise, with litany and lyre, and somber prayer implacably the same. Oh, incommunicable hope that lies deep in despair, as tapers that illume some fearful fane's arcanic sacred gloom. Oh, solace of all weary hearts and wise, the dream which Satan hath for anodyne, which is to God a sweet and secret wine. And now, ladies and gentlemen, and we trust you can hear this, it is, once again, improbably but surely, the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio. Well, we seem to have some variation in the volume here, not being controlled by us on the Ask Dr. Hal Show, but good evening just the same. You are fervid friends and fans. Etherettes and rocket rookies. Remember, the Ask Dr. Hal Show, the home edition, is coming on Sunday, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And you just go to AskDrHalShow.com. One click gets you there. You can watch or you can participate, and you can come to the after-show chat. But we've got some very special features this time, dear fiends. We have monster movie clips from two movies that I guarantee most have never heard of or seen. One, an incredible, obscure Japanese film where some beautiful teenage Japanese girls move into a haunted house. And all sorts of bad things happen. See a piano devour a young girl. And we've got the sequel to The Gate by Tibor Takacs, an incredible director. The second movie, many who have seen it think is better than the first movie. I was at Tibor Takacs' house in 2002 when I was working down there in Hollywood. It was Oscar night, and that was when they caught up with me after telephoning me across town. This was pre-cell phone. My father had died. But that's no fault of Tibor or anyone else. At any rate, this film has to do with demons and monsters. It's stop-motion animation, and it's just well done. So we like it. And then, did anybody ever read or even subscribe to Famous Monsters of Filmland? The ads in the back fascinated me. And among the things you could order, though you were lucky if they ever came, was the 8mm film, in this case a Super 8 film, of The Telltale Heart. Yes, the Edgar Allan Poe story. A UPA cartoon, but so much better done than what we think of as UPA cartoons. We think of the later ones. As always, the actual animation itself is not extensive, but the design is so excellent, so eloquent. It carries the cartoon on, and it's guaranteed to scare children, so make sure they watch it also. But above and beyond those things, we are debuting the new music video from Sky Murmurs. It is called First Contact. And you can see my pal, the lead guitarist. He is the supervising animation director of The Simpsons. He has included a lot of footage of me and other things from a movie he directed that I was in. And some of my animation is shown as part of this video. And it's a catchy song. I like it. Of course, I've heard it a number of times. The video will be preceded by the band sitting there and talking about its genesis and me and all sorts of things. So please don't miss this special show. But if you do, although you can't participate, you can download it from the same email address, AskDrHalShow.com. Now, doctor, in this URL is represented as a D and an R, and there is no period after it. The only dot occurs in .com. It takes you to our website, which now we're talking about redoing, but redoing a website seems to be a headache that takes forever and is never done. The old website will do just fine. To download this or any episode after episode number 3, that's when we started recording them. And this will be episode 53. Like a bright light breaking in over the mountains when the sky has been clouded, dark, and suggestive of damp misery. Suddenly, the sun manages to get through because it's actually shining under the clouds and everything lights up for just a moment. Well, that's what we hope to bring to you here on this and many other programs. In the show, we have our little animations and things done by our good friend Professor Goughlin, who is now working as a Warner Brothers animator. She may not even be able to be on the show this time, but Pastor Pontius Pressure will be the interlocutor, firing the questions at me, Dr. Howland Owl, which I will answer. In addition, bardic recitations will distinguish the production, as they did in the live nightclub act. We hope to return in the live nightclub act soon, if people can make it out to Monterey Boulevard near the Balboa Park BART station. But that's a matter for another time. The mind grows weary with all these projections and plans. What is certain? Well, now, after a terrible computer crash, which cost me 5 days of work, I have succeeded in getting my airplane tickets. So now I know when I'm supposed to fly away and when I'm supposed to fly back. I am aware that Trump fired the air traffic controllers and planes are having trouble staying in the sky and landing and so forth. But they're all professionals. Nobody wants to crash. I'm sure they'll be extra vigilant. I have to fly to Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact, to get my connecting flight to Albany, New York. The last time we were in this place, I spoke of nightmares. But there is something else that we could speak of from Borges. Something which we recently partook of when I, Dr. Howland Owl, presented the Seven Voyages of Sinbad the Sailor. Although the middle one about the Cyclops seemed to have some sort of horrible interruption to the signal, I posted them, and as bad as it may have sounded live, you can download it and it sounds okay. So I was going to begin talking about that wonderful book. I talk to people and they do not understand what I'm talking about. They can't believe, for example, that Aladdin was Chinese. And they say, no, he was not Chinese. He was some kind of Arab. Well, in Walt Disney's world, he was. But the book is a marvel of strange, disturbing fantasy. And speaking of strange, disturbing fantasies, we have Gay Rob here, and this is no fantasy.
Gay Rob is not an Arab.
Gay Rob is gay robberating his presence now. It don't seem too loud, though, but we'll see what we can do. The guest mic is up, up, up. How about now? Oh, you can barely be heard.
No, you gotta actually turn it on. The red button and the slider has to go on. Guest,
Mike. Pardon me, but what red button? Oh, that?
Sure, I do. Certainly.
Yeah. Turn yourself on.
Now I had flailed Michael Pepe style and turned myself off, but I think everything is...
I think, yeah, my pants are on fire, but this time I actually know my pants are on fire.
Well, knowing is everything. But actually, in that incident I spoke of earlier, Mr. Pepe's pants did not catch on fire, even though he was sitting on a stool which did catch on fire.
Well, then he tells the truth.
About what?
Well, I mean,
I'm sure he does.
If he was a liar, his pants would be on fire.
Oh, I see. Yes, that's true.
He was able to prove he's a truth teller by having the flame so close to his pants and not having his pants actually ignite.
Well, that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah. And I think I'm done here, right? I think I'm good? Okay, no.
Is that it? You were simply going to corroborate Pepe's pants thing? I can...
corroborate Pepe's pants.
Yeah, right.
Okay. No, I figured I'll maybe quit while I'm ahead. Like, I was still fairly articulate just then, but, like,
stop,
you know
ahead.
Where it's going. You know, in 30 minutes, I'll just start into a psychedelic mumble, and he'll be like...
That's all right. We could render it to extra psychedelic with our mind-breaking special effect.
That's right, yeah. Is VJ on the video tip for tonight's show?
She has been.
Okay.
At 8:59, she left a blank box and not any lettering. But maybe she's tuned in. The question is, can they hear us? And I think they are. Can, because Dr. Penny just responded. So now let us get the monstrous aspect of the show moving forward toward its destiny with doom.
Monster.
As the fury of the elements combine for our science project this evening.
Science, experiments, that's all you geeks want to think about.
So I'm crazy, am I? You'll see how crazy I am when I bring this monster to life. Now let's... Here, you, Fritz, lower the cosmic diffuser. That's the thing. You can't get good help these days.
Sure, boss.
And now we're going to raise that table up. But before we do, I will tell you that you were wrong, Dr. Waldman, when you spoke of the highest ray in the spectrum. I have discovered a higher one. And it is the great ray that first brought life into the world. Ray Harryhausen. It's a special
ray.
And in this equipment, I will supercharge this monster with electrical energy and that ray. And you expect me to believe that you can bring life to the dead? That body has never lived. I made it with my own two hands. These hands! Now, do you think I'm crazy? Sit down. Sit down. While I turn the switches and zap the bejesus out of this monster. Henry, you don't know what you're doing. Oh, but I do, my dear. Prepare to see a monster juiced to life. Here goes. Look, he's twitching. He's moving. Or is he? No, he is. He's alive. Alive, I tell you, alive. Fine spectacle. One man crazy and three perfectly sane spectators. Oh, Henry, in the name of God. In the name of God. Now I know what it feels like to be God. Yuck, 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 yuck. Working in the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld a wondrous sight. Some creatures had crawled to my humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode. Well, that's the old type of monster, but I am convinced that the new type, as seen in the fantastic movie Sinners, is the way to go, where the monsters have reasoned, cogent arguments as to why they should let you kill them, why you should let them kill you. And they make music, too. And the music that they make is fantastic. But the whole movie is fantastic, and you could call it a musical because so much Delta blues music is in it. And the special effects are fantastic because they have two guys playing brothers, but it's actually one guy. But they're on the screen together all the time, lighting each other's cigarettes and so forth. It is flawless. But those vampires are ultra creepy. They'll give you bad dreams at night because they're so plausible. Also, this director, this genius, Ryan Coogler, made such an amazingly good movie with Wakanda Forever for the Marvel franchise. I never saw it. Did you?
Yeah, I saw that he did both of the Black Panther movies.
Supposedly, they made a fortune and they gave him all this money to produce this movie about Clarksdale, Mississippi in 1931.
Because yes. I don't know if he's had a dud yet, so like he's bankable, right?
You get introduced to all these wonderful people, and then you realize, wait a minute, this is a vampire movie, they're all going to get it. And sure enough. But it does go on, as the Marvel movies do. He learned that you can end it and then show some credits and then come back and show another ending and then show some more credits and then come back and end it again.
Yeah, yeah.
So he jumps forward in time until we get to the 1990s for the final scenes. It's really amazing. I will buy it. Right now it costs $35 to buy.
Yeah, it'll cheapen that.
I think it will. It must. They always do. And I'll get online and I'll get me a disc this year movie. I ain't downloading it from the cloud, no way, no how, as long as I'm a free American. And you can take that to the bank. You can put that in your pipe and smoke it. Yuck, 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 yuck. So, what else is new? Why tell us again why we can't do Relodio? It's because our hostess is taking a trip or something like that?
I think so, yeah. I think Sarah and the child are on a on a head trip.
Excellent.
But like head and body trip, too.
The more time spent out of the domestic house, as lovely as that house is, probably the better for the both of them.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, how often can you just eat pizza and watch Netflix?
Also, I understand. What is it that I understand? I understand not much because this candy that I ate is really coming on fast, huh?
Oh, the softening wafer.
The softening by Stephen King.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have another one, actually.
I believe I'll have another.
I said just one. No, well, anyway, go ahead.
If you have more than three, it could get kind of
well, I got to go over and draw in the Cartoon Club when this show is over. Finish those mini comics, and I'm... The other day, I bought $121 worth of graphic aids to help with this cartooning. I've really gotten into it, and now I can put the dot screens on, and I've got a great injector that fills my pen without it being a big deal. All sorts of new knives and blades. We're making these comics look pretty profesh. And R. Crumb's coming out with a new comic. Everybody's excited about that. It's going to be vastly entertaining, all about despair and nihilism and misery and paranoia.
Is that like a graphic book?
Or? Oh, it'll be in graphic form. It'll probably be printed as a book, yes?
Yeah.
I would hope so. That is the preferred and best medium. He wouldn't like me to say that, but I always like to get stoned and read the comics, his comics.
Right.
Because they're so organic, you really get into that world. It signals to that part of the brain.
Well, that's what the hand and the eye can do to each other. They could speak a common tongue, maybe, as it were.
I have read The Thousand Nights and a Night several times in various translations. The Sir Richard Burton one is interesting, although he changes it to something that I think nobody ever would have said or spoke, you know, weird rhyming words and so forth. But he gets the gist of it, and furthermore, the obscenity of it, because it's full of horrendous sex scenes and so on. The original, with giant genies and so on. So that also is something that may reward the peruser of this classic of world literature. And I did 7 shows here, each one a different voyage of Sinbad the Sailor, the actual voyages.
Yeah.
And there is a Cyclops, but it's in the 3rd voyage.
When does he invent a whole continent?
That's a good question. At one point, he leaves the Earth entirely and goes to another dimension, and the sea captain, the sea captain cries out in despair, you know, we're lost in this ocean where giant mountain-sized fish and monsters are leaping around. And he ends up washed ashore, and he ends up in a city. Everything seems nice. He gets married. He settles down there. But it turns out that most of the people who live in the city are demons who on a certain day develop wings and fly around.
Okay.
And he asks his neighbor, gee, that sounds like fun. Could you kind of take me when you fly around? I can get on your back. And his neighbor says, okay. You know. But once they get up in the air, matters take a different turn. Anyway, that was the last, that was the 7th voyage. Sinbad didn't want to go on the 7th voyage. In fact, after about 3 voyages, he was played out and thought, you know, I'll just stay right here. I made all this money. I've got all these, this wonderful place to stay. But he, then he got the itch for travel again, just like Gulliver, you know, who would say, after that last voyage, I'm never going anywhere. But then, well, now I'm much more prosperous. I even own several ships. I might as well go on one of them. And so back into the world of mystery. So the last voyage Sinbad had sworn he would never go, but the Caliph of Baghdad called him in, the Caliph Harun al-Rashid, and said, you know, you met the Sultan of Samarkand on one of your stories that you've told, and I'd like to get in touch with him, so I'm going to officially send you back there, you know, to go through these monster-infested seas and so forth. And Sinbad felt this was like a death sentence, but he kissed the ground between the Caliph's feet and said, sure, tell me when. And off they went. And sure enough, things developed in a sinister way, as they tend to. Not just in these stories, but in life. When the big that is small shall again become tall, into fiery rock to rise you must fall.
And if the land is thrown into the flaming pit, he may be destroyed.
Yeah, you might burn him up.
Your promise must be kept.
Sinbad knows the way. In these fairy tales, when you say you're going to do something, you've got to do it. Down goes the lamp into the bubbling lava and sinks underneath, a shot copied by Peter Jackson in his Lord of the Rings, by his own admission. Also, when Sinbad and the Princess Parisa swing across the broken bridge gap, which was copied directly by George Lucas in, I think, The Empire Strikes Back?
No, the first one.
First one, okay. When they landed on the other side, the stunt woman who was substituting for Cathryn Grant broke both ankles.
Really?
Yeah. Always makes me wince when I see that happen, because I know, oh dear, well, that's what they pay her for, you know.
Yeah.
She was out of the picture, but got the big bucks or whatever you get in Spain with Spanish actors and cheap Columbia Pictures producer Charles Schneer trying to save every penny, to squeeze every dime until it screams. But he did promote Harryhausen. Without him, those movies wouldn't have been made.
Right.
And supposedly,
Schneer is constantly thanked, you know, when Harryhausen takes a bow.
There was enmity between Schneer and Don Chaffee. And Don Chaffee said, this guy hates my guts.
Really?
But Don Chaffee directed two great Harryhausen movies. Directed Jason and the Argonauts. Yeah. Directed 1 Million Years B.C.
Did he do Seventh Voyage, too?
No. Voyage is directed by Nathan Duran,
who also did
20 Million Miles to Earth.
Yeah.
And what else? Did he do Earth versus... No. He didn't do Earth versus the Flying Saucers, but he did Three Worlds of Gulliver, maybe. I'm not quite sure about that. No, I think Jack Sher directed Three Worlds. I don't know. Cy Enfield, who was a great director, directed Mysterious Island.
Yes.
He was blacklisted by the Republicans and had to leave the U.S. and go to Europe. But he made some famous movies there. Most famously, Zulu, which was Michael Caine's first movie.
Oh, yes.
And then he made the sequel, Zulu Dawn. I see you've got a dragon and a cyclops fighting there. I love that squeal the dragon makes. The Cyclops has a somewhat limited vocabulary, as Sakura pointed out. I really can't see it because most of the screen is obscured and it's tiny as a postage stamp. Oh, there. There's that dragon. If you believe the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad comic book, and you probably shouldn't, that dragon's name is Magog. Some people in the online community think its name is Taro. But that's because they misunderstand Sakura shouting, follow, follow. They think he's shouting, Taro, Taro.
Oh, really?
Yes, they do. And so that is how that misconception has arisen, that the dragon's name is Taro. But it's probably not named anything. But dragons and magicians are connected, and he probably raised it up as a wee thing from its crystalline egg.
The Sakura has a Twitter page, and he wants him to follow.
He has a Twitter page? He should. Did you ever see that fan movie somebody made where you're...
Instagram, sorry, that's what I meant.
You're in Sakura's cave, and he's feeding the dragon with a shovel, and Sinbad is there, and the other character's there. It's all stop motion. It's really well done.
Wait, say again?
It is a piece of fan movie making, but I don't know the title, and I don't know who. Now, Joe Laudati is making a Guanji movie, and it looks great. He's built the model, and he's animated it. You should look that up. You can see scenes of the new Guanji walking around, and there are new dinosaurs and everything. He's going to end up with a 20-minute film, which I can't wait to watch. Just go to... No hell, what is it? It's stop motion something or other. Yes, the words stop motion figure very prominently.
Guanji management. Follow.
Well, the dragon doesn't care to, but he must follow.
Right.
You know, he lifts his head in protest. The psychology of the dragon is just great. Also, the way he dies is so moving. Even Sinbad and the princess are sorry for him.
Yeah. Well, he was the slave of the wizard.
Right. He was chained, and he broke his chain defending the wizard's cavern. That's over and above the call of duty. On the other side, he couldn't... Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I forgot to press the red button. This is the first actual part of the show that's gone out, but we have been capturing it on film here, or rather capturing it in a visual medium. So now, I hope you understand, and I'm glad that you were mentioning it, I don't understand why there is a button that you have to press in order to be heard. I've never understood it. Well, too bad. That was all my bungling. I can't believe I did it a second time. At any rate, this has been picked up by an important venue, so...
So how?
Yes.
Could you please go more into some personal stories, maybe starting from your lung thing?
Well, in Arizona, it gets really hot, and the temperature builds and builds and builds until the monsoon season starts. And in the monsoon season, the rain comes down hammering, you know, with incredible volume and force. And new channels are cut through the desert. Arroyos and things appear. They're, you know, a wall of mud and water comes and does it. So a wall of mud and water came, and it exposed some graves that nobody knew about.
Wow.
Off in the distance, you could see an old cemetery. But this was far from there. And the hacking of the water that came by led, you could see the shapes of the graves and the people in there with their long hair hanging down, and the shape of the coffins, which had rotted away but were preserved in the mud there. And so my friends and I went there in the morning to collect some human skulls.
Oh,
and
my
things.
God.
Yes, well, it wasn't even supposed to be a graveyard, but there it was. And when we arrived early in the morning, we could see the silhouettes against the sky of kids riding away on their bikes as fast as possible, waving human pelvises and things. So so we got some human remains, which you're never supposed to do, especially if it were Native Americans. But in this case, it seemed like a Western burial type of situation.
Did the skulls have skin on it?
No, but one of them was incredibly awful looking, shriveled and brown and evil with long, sharp teeth and so on. And that one I had for a while until people said they were creeped out by it, you know, and I had to give it up.
Wow.
And the one I have now has a lot of mortician's plaster on it. I think it may be somebody who was shot in the head. But it's compared to that other one, which seemed haunted and creepy, this one is peaceful and has been with me for many years.
So they were murder graves?
I don't know. Maybe a guy was run over by a wagon. Who knows? There's no way to know.
And then they shot him in the head?
Well, there's a big piece of the skull that has the mortician's plaster there. You know, they fixed it up so it would look all right in the grave. But
they put a plaster after the body dies.
I guess that's my interpretation. I don't know. There's a great deal of plaster. So a person couldn't survive with, three quarters of the skull replaced by this plaster. And it's a nice, large skull, vigorous, only one tooth. But this other one that had multiple sharp teeth and it just looked malevolent or something. The eye sockets looked malevolent. And one night I was up late writing and the skull's way up on a shelf there. And suddenly a tooth ejected from the skull and landed on the page I was writing in it with the dust puffing out from it, you know. And that did not make me feel all that secure. Yeah, you just have had to see this thing. It was really something. You know, natural variation. Everyone is different. Everyone has different faces, different bodies, different chemical metabolism. This one was quite different. Some people took it and they neutralized it in some fashion.
That's cool.
Yes. I hate to admit to being a grave robber on the show. Well, yeah, I guess we probably lost the audience when what they heard is last week's show, since I didn't press the button until I remembered. You know, I was thinking about everything, thinking about setting you up. But let's continue the talk, because it is interesting. I'm still talking to Appleberry, who's one of the cartoonists who draws at Dermophilia. And I anticipate going over there and drawing again tonight, which is a great pleasure. And in the part that nobody heard but has been recorded anyway for posterity, we talked about different aspects of cartooning. Maybe we could continue doing that. Did you see that book on romance comics that I gave to Mary?
Which one, Wallywood?
No, it's a little book about the history of romance comics.
Never seen it.
Huh. Well, I'm sure she'll show it to you. Did you ever read those comics?
No, I haven't personally read them.
You know, they're quite bourgeois about, you know, losing someone and winning someone and all of that, you know, the yearning and you're being disillusioned with the person that you're in love with and, you know, every variation on it, but some of them are really well drawn and it was a big category of comics.
Right. Kirby did a bunch of those.
Still is, yes, he did. And then, of course, Archie exists in a netherworld like that, but not as serious as some of the old ones.
Yeah, Archie's still kicking it.
Yep, that's an immortal
really
franchise.
Silent J and Bob run with Archie.
That's too bad. I don't have much patience for it, but the characters are very indelible, and you know when you refer to them what you're talking about and who you're talking about. And online, they there are all sorts of people drawing them, including porno versions. There's an enormous fan base for Archie comics.
What, like a fan porno or what?
Well, they reproduce the drawing style very well. And in fact, one of them, showing Betty and Veronica getting friendly in the shower, was drawn by Dan DiCarlo, the actual Archie comics artist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, you can look these silly things up online. You'll find it interesting. But they're a big chunk of American kid popular consciousness.
No pressure.
I asked Floyd if he liked the Tintin cartoons of Hergé, and he didn't like them at all. But I wondered, do you like them? Do you know of them?
I couldn't get into Tintin. What I read as a kid.
The writing, I think, is really good in some of them. The stories are quite good. But I like the lean Claire, you know, the clean line style that Hergé came up with.
I think it's a little too clean for me. But
the story.
Maybe now that I'm older, I can maybe understand the appeal of Tintin.
The wonderful thing to me is Captain Haddock, the alcoholic friend of Tintin, who's very fallible, but a wonderfully sold character. And Tintin discovered ice on the moon when he went there, long before we actually discovered ice on the moon.
Yes, that is true.
His dog had a little spacesuit, and his dog accidentally went down a crevasse and was, you know, he had to rappel down on a line to save him in that story. And some of the Tintin villains I find very interesting. Rastapopoulos is one of them, who is a financier, a capitalist who was selling Moroccans on a pilgrimage to Mecca into slavery. And he was exposed by Tintin, and you know, he made his escape, but he comes back in another one called Flight 714 to Jakarta, where he's arranged a whole revenge thing for Tintin and his friends. But what they don't realize is that there are space aliens involved this time.
Damn.
Yeah. It's quite enjoyable. The way the story is run, I just like the writing. I like the development of it. But it is very Belgian, because it's not the slam-bang style that we're accustomed to. Do you have favorites among all comics? I mean, among all comics?
Sin City. That's my number one comic.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sin City, favorite comic book.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of comics that I read that I really like, but I almost don't want to say they're my favorite comics.
Well, the ones that entertain you, that give you pleasure.
Yeah, I read this comic book called Pyongyang recently, and it was about this guy who was staying in North Korea as a cartoonist. Like, the art in there is very, I don't want to say infographic, but, like, sequential, simple line art, which to me isn't the most appealing comic book art, but it was, like, a comic book I really enjoyed.
How about Persepolis? Did you like that one?
That was okay. They made me read that in school.
Oh, well, that would take the fun out of anything.
Yeah, I think that might have been why it was kind of tedious for me to read. It was pretty cool. I liked reading it. It was nice.
I love Charles Burns, everything Charles Burns does.
I think I read one of his recent books about a guy tripping out on a toaster, but I didn't find it too appealing, I won't lie.
Well, he did a whole series about alienated teenagers who are having odd physical changes happening to their bodies, and that's being picked up and made into a movie now, I think.
Right, yeah. Oh, what? When?
I don't know where I saw that. Maybe online on my phone or something. However they do it, they can't make it look as good as those drawings.
Yeah, that's true.
There's something about reading a comic book, the fusion of it with you. And I, as a kid, I realized I enjoy reading comic books that I've already read, you know. There's something dull and boring, and yet there's something fascinating about experiencing the stories again.
With stories I like, I find, like, I see new things from it every time I read it. Every once in a while, I'll reread it. I'll be like, why did I even like this in the first place? But, yeah, I don't know. I also reread books more than I actually read new stuff, just because a bunch of new stuff is so garbage these days.
Well, I think it was Theodore Sturgeon who said 99% of science fiction is garbage because 99% of everything is garbage. That he was replying to criticisms, you know, science fiction was escape literature, pulp, crap, and so on. But in fact, it's kind of the one of the most old currents in the history of storytelling.
What is?
I say science fiction, but I mean just the story of fantastic events.
Right.
But some things are science fiction, like Gulliver's Travels, for example, I feel is science fiction because of the way everything is worked out. Even, you know, it's a most interesting landscape psychologically.
I never read it, but I watched the Jack Black adaptation.
Oh, I hated that.
Loved that one.
I loved the book as a child, and there are parts that are not for children. When Gulliver was at the court of Brobdingnag, he was a big sensation with the king and the queen and with everybody, and the young princesses would take him, and they would take off his clothes and they would put him between their breasts and so on, and he would watch them urinate and all sorts of stuff. It goes on. It's definitely worth reading.
That sounds great.
The third book takes place aboard an enormous flying saucer, which is called The Floating Island of Laputa.
Okay.
And, of course, Puta means horror, but it has to do with satirizing the intellectual and scientific pretensions of the time. Now, actually, this is all kind of conservative and against progress, but he's such an entertaining writer that you don't mind this cantankerousness. And a very strange thing, while he's in this strange philosopher's paradise, which floats around, it's an enormous disc, they take him to an observatory and they show him the two moons of Mars. Well, at that time, no one knew that Mars did have two moons.
Huh.
But they're described exactly. So this is a great mystery. How in the world did this happen? Astronomers had not discovered Deimos and Phobos in the time that Swift was writing.
Must be a subconscious thing. Some people just pick up on information without ever having learned it.
It might be possible that there is a super powerful way to discover things through inference, just by thinking of along chains of possibilities in some way, like the way that octopus, Paul the octopus, seemed to be able to predict who would win races and things like that.
Right.
They worked him to death, unfortunately, but that was a remarkable thing. And octopuses have a lot of brain power. They just don't live very long.
Mm-hmm. They got big-ass heads. Something going on up in there.
Not only in the head, the nervous system is spread out and the tentacle can be severed but commanded to do something and it will do it.
Man.
Like go over there and wave to make somebody think the octopus is over there.
What the hell?
another thing, which was on National Geographic, was some divers were down on the bottom, and an octopus came and mocked them by tucking in all its tentacles except for two, and then walking like this past.
I think I saw that. I saw this photo recently. I think it was a crawfish, and it was a replication of a human face.
Wow.
Like, on the top of its head. Like, I guess it, like, camouflaged itself to look like a human face.
That's bizarre. It's like the Xanti misfits in the Outer Limits TV show, where there were these ant-like beings with human faces in the show.
That's hella creepy.
Yes. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we talked all about cartooning, and unfortunately, I hadn't pressed the button. I swear by Snip, Snap, Snorum, and Hi, Cockalorum that I will never do that again. This is the second time that I bombed out the whole first part of the show by not pressing the button.
How long does the show go for?
It goes until 1, or as long as I want. Okay. I've been closing it down a little before 1 lately so I can clean up and head over to the shop.
Cool. Cartoonist Club might be listening to us.
Well, I wonder if they heard some of last week's show and what they thought about that.
They probably did.
Oh, well, it all depends whether they heard last week's show. If they didn't, they would say, "Where's Apple?" You know.
And then I cut in randomly in the middle.
And that's better than being completely blocked by that stupid blue button.
Man, maybe I'm going to get some more box wine.
That's a good idea.
All right.
It is the product of the local vintners, Cabernet Sauvignon.
All right, let's get into it.
Yeah, well, I do think that the telling stories of a fantastic nature is the, you know, that's been part of storytelling from the very beginning. There seems to be a prejudice toward a very limited aesthetic of adultery performed in an upper middle class setting. And this is what literature is and always ought to be. Not for me.
Yeah, a lot of stuff gets lost in time. A lot of the nitty-gritty stuff.
So much is retrievable now. But it's interesting to see what does make its way. I suppose the sound from next door is being picked up. So must it be. It was ever thus. But I still don't understand why they put up insulation on that wall when there's nothing coming through there and no insulation to speak of on this wall. I think this whole outfit is going to move downtown to a ramshackle building on Market Street where there's more space. but horribly inconvenient for me because it's so near where I live at the present time.
And then there will be no audio or no music playing? You think they'll close it down?
That's right. Well, they won't unless there's some contamination from some other source that is coming in.
I see.
Well, let me see. How can I say? There are certain types of comic book that I like. You know, anything that is, if it's simultaneously stylized and believable, isn't that a good thing?
If the art's appealing enough, I'll believe it. But I mean, also the writing does have to be good, which is a rare combination in comics.
If it pulls you in, then you want to believe it, you see.
If they lead you right in the way they want to tell the story, then it's a perfect comic book. But it's taken me a while for me to accept that. I don't need to like the art style to enjoy the comic book, if that makes sense. I always kind of judge comic books visually completely.
Mm-hmm.
I started kind of collecting a lot of comic books. I have like a huge collection of books.
Do you find some are more fun to read?
They're fun to look at, but like I haven't found comics fun to read in a long time just because, I don't know. I
really like Crumb's continuity. It seems so natural and effortless.
I did love Crumb stuff, for sure. That's a good one. Can't remember. I think I read Fritz the Cat. It was like the first Crumb thing I read.
Well, that's...
I was blown away, actually, but it was because I was like taking like really heavy edibles for the first time in my life. I'd never seen anything like Crumb at the time, so my mind was blown.
Did you see the things he did in Weirdo, the Maud O'Day stories and like that?
Maybe.
To me, he just gets better and better.
Yeah.
Always. And looking forward to this new book that's coming out.
Which one?
It's a new comic by him, according to what I read.
Is it the... I think I know what you're talking about.
The subject matter is supposedly despair and paranoia and, you know, the usual topics. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Crumb. He's an interesting guy.
Absolutely.
He don't like me, though.
Well, I'm sorry about that. Maybe you just got him on a bad day or something.
No, he looked pretty happy, pretty leisurely. I think that was just his character. Yeah, he was pretty chill. I sent him an email recently.
And the Book of Genesis is, you know, a wonderful thing.
I don't think he even really wanted to do that one.
But he did. He did a wonderful job.
Yeah.
And it came out at the same time as Basil Wolverton's pictures from the Bible.
That's cool.
And he pointed that out. He said people ought to get that one and look at it.
It's good shit.
Yeah. Some of the stories. One story in particular was printed in the New Yorker, and it was printed in Playboy. It was an excerpt from one of those stories about vengeance and mass killings and stuff like that.
Uh-oh.
That's, you know, it's there. It's in the Bible, the whole stories of the... people in the Book of Genesis.
I only read Adam and Eve.
That was good. There are two versions of the story in Genesis, but the way he depicted it I thought was great. And at the end they can't go back into the garden because of the whirling flaming swords of those creatures, those winged lion
things. Cherubs or something like
that. Yes. Cherubim.
Mm-hmm. never to come back. Paradise Lost, bitch.
Yeah. Well,
West Side.
Then there's also Paradise Regained. And that's the one where Satan says to Jesus, well, isn't it fair to say that I too am a son of God? Not just you. God created me.
Okay, what happens after that? You go going back to heaven? Or?
Oh, he has a lot of arguments. No, he'll never be allowed back.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Even Satan's not equal. What the hell?
You know, if you're a Satanist, that means you're some kind of a Christian, because Satan is a Christian character.